Chapter 3. Cautiously he pressed against the ivory door, and it swung silently inward. On the shimmering threshold, Conan stared like a wolf in strange surroundings, ready to fight or flee on the instant. He was looking into a large chamber with a domed golden ceiling. The walls were of green jade, the floor of ivory, partly covered by thick rugs. Smoke and exotic scent of incense floated up from a brazier on a golden tripod, and behind it sat an idol on a sort of marble couch. Conan stared aghast. The image had the body of a man, naked and green in color, but the head was one of nightmare and madness. Too large for the human body, it had no attributes of humanity. Conan stared at the wide flaring ears, the curling proboscis, on either side of which stood white tusks tipped with round golden balls. The eyes were closed as if in sleep. This, then, was the reason for the name, the Tower of the Elephant. For the head of the thing was much like that of the beasts described by the Shemitish wanderer. This was Yara's god. Where, then, would the gem be but concealed in the idol, since the stone was called the elephant's heart? As Conan came forward, his eyes fixed on the motionless idol, the eyes of the thing opened suddenly. The Cimmerian froze in his tracks. It was no image. It was a living thing, and he was trapped in its chamber. That he did not instantly explode in a burst of murderous frenzy is a fact that measures his horror, which paralyzed him where he stood. A civilized man in his position would have sought doubtful refuge in the conclusion that he was insane. It did not occur to the Cimmerian to doubt his senses. He knew that he was face to face with a demon of the elder world, and the realization robbed him of all his faculties except sight. The trunk of the horror was lifted and quested about. The topaz eyes stared unseeingly, and Conan knew the monster was blind. With the thought came a thawing of his frozen nerves, and he began to back silently toward the door. But the creature heard. The sensitive trunk stretched toward him, and Conan's horror froze him again when the being spoke in a strange, stammering voice that never changed its key or timbre. Conan knew that those jaws were never built or intended for human speech.
"Who is here? Have you come to torture me again, Yara? Will you never be done? Oh, Yagkosha, is there no end to agony?"
Tears rolled from the sightless eyes, and Conan's gaze strayed to the limbs stretched on the marble couch, and he knew the monster would not rise to attack him. He knew the marks of the rack and the searing brand of the flame, and tough-souled as he was, he stood aghast at the ruined deformities which his reason told him had once been limbs as comely as his own. And suddenly all fear and repulsion went from him to be replaced by a great pity. What this monster was, Conan could not know, but the evidences of its sufferings were so terrible and pathetic that a strange aching sadness came over the Cimmerian. He knew not why. He only felt that he was looking upon a cosmic tragedy, and he shrank with shame as if the guilt of a whole race were laid upon him.
"I am not Yara," he said. "I am only a thief. I will not harm you."
"Come near that I may touch you,"
the creature faltered, and Conan came near unfearingly, his sword hanging forgotten in his hand. The sensitive trunk came out and groped over his face and shoulders as a blind man gropes, and its touch was light as a girl's hand.
"You are not of Yara's race of devils,"
sighed the creature.
"The clean, lean fierceness of the wastelands marks you. I know your people from of old, whom I knew by another name in the long, long ago, when another world lifted its jeweled spires to the stars. There is blood on your fingers."
"A spider in the chamber above, and a lion in the garden," muttered Conan.
"You have slain a man, too, this night,"
answered the other.
"And there is death in the tower above. I feel, I know."
"Aye,"
muttered Conan.
"The prince of all thieves lies there dead from the bite of a vermin."
"So, and so,"
the strange inhuman voice rose to a sort of low chant,
"a slaying in the tavern and a slaying on the roof, I know, I feel, and the third will make the magic of which not even Yara dreams. Oh, magic of deliverance, green gods of Yag!"
Again tears fell as the tortured body was rocked to and fro in the grip of varied emotions. Conan looked on, bewildered. Then the convulsions ceased. The soft, sightless eyes were turned toward the Cimmerian. The trunk beckoned.
"Oh, man, listen,"
said the strange being.
"I am foul and monstrous to you, am I not? Nay, do not answer, I know. but you would seem as strange to me could I see you. There are many worlds besides this earth, and life takes many shapes. I am neither god nor demon, but flesh and blood, like yourself, though the substance differ in part, and the form be cast in a different mold. I am very old, O man of the waste countries. Long and long ago I came to this planet with others of my world from the green planet Yag, which circles forever in the outer fringe of this universe. We swept through space on mighty wings that drove us through the cosmos quicker than light because we had warred with the kings of Yag and were defeated and outcast. But we could never return, for on Earth our wings withered from our shoulders. Here we abode apart from earthly life. We fought the strange and terrible forms of life which then walked the earth, so that we became feared and were not molested in the dim jungles of the east where we had our abode. We saw men growing from the ape and build the shining cities of Volusia, Camellia, Camoria, and their sisters. We saw them reel before the thrusts of the heathen Atlanteans and Picts and Lemurians. We saw the oceans arise and engulf Atlantis and Lemuria and the isles of the Picts and the shining cities of civilization. We saw the survivors of Pictum and Atlantis build their Stone Age empires and go down to ruin locked in bloody wars. We saw the Picts sink into abysmal savagery, the Atlanteans into apedom again. We saw new savages drift southward in conquering waves from the Arctic Circle to build a new civilization with new kingdoms called Nemedia and Koth and Aquilonia and their sisters. We saw your people rise under a new name from the jungles of the apes that had been the Atlanteans. We saw the descendants of the Lemurians who had survived the cataclysm rise again through savagery and ride westward as Hyrcanians. And we saw this race of devils, survivors of the ancient civilization that was before Atlantis sank, come once more into power and culture, this accursed kingdom of Zamora. All this we saw, neither aiding nor hindering the immutable cosmic law, and one by one we died, for we of Yag are not immortal, though our lives are as the lives of planets and constellations. At last I alone was left, dreaming of old times among the ruined temples of jungle-lost Kitai, worshipped as a god by an ancient yellow-skinned race. Then came Yara. Versed in dark knowledge handed down through the days of barbarism since before Atlantis sank. First he sat at my feet and learned wisdom. But he was not satisfied with what I taught him, for it was white magic, and he wished evil lore, to enslave kings and glut a fiendish ambition. I would teach him none of the black secrets I had gained, through no wish of mine, through the aeons. But his wisdom was deeper than I guessed. With guile gotten among the dusky tombs of dark Stygia, he trapped me into divulging a secret I had not intended to bear, and turning my own power upon me, he enslaved me. Ah, gods of Yag, my cup has been bitter since that hour. He brought me up from the lost jungles of Kitai, where the gray apes danced to the pipes of the yellow priests, and offerings of fruit and wine heaped my broken altars. No more was I a god to kindly jungle folk. I was a slave to a devil in human form.
Again, tears stole from the unseeing eyes.
He pent me in this tower, which at his command I built for him in a single night. By fire and drac he mastered me, and by strange unearthly tortures you would not understand. In agony I would long ago have taken my own life if I could, but he kept me alive, mangled, blinded, and broken, to do his foul bidding. And for 300 years I have done his bidding from this marble couch, blackening my soul with cosmic sins and staining my wisdom with crimes because I had no other choice. Yet not all my ancient secrets has he wrested from me, and my last gift shall be the sorcery of the blood and the jewel. For I feel the end of time draw near. You are the hand of fate. I beg of you, take the gem you will find on yonder altar.
Conan turned to the gold and ivory altar indicated and took up a great round jewel, clear as crimson crystal, and he knew that this was the heart of the elephant.
Now for the great magic, the mighty magic, such as Earth has not seen before and shall not see again through 1,000,000,000 of millenniums. By my lifeblood I conjure it, by blood born on the green breast of Yag, dreaming far poised in the great blue vastness of space. Take your sword, man, and cut out my heart.
then squeeze it so that the blood will flow over the red stone. Then go you down these stairs and enter the ebony chamber where Yara sits wrapped in lotus dreams of evil. Speak his name and he will awaken. Then lay this gem before him and say, Yag-Kosha gives you a last gift and a last enchantment. Then get you from this tower quickly. Fear not, your way shall be made clear. The life of man is not the life of Yag, nor is human death the death of Yag. Let me be free of this cage of broken blind flesh, and I will once more be Yogar of Yag, morning-crowned and shining, with wings to fly and feet to dance and eyes to see and hands to break. Uncertainly, Conan approached, and Yag-Kosha, or Yogar, as if sensing his uncertainty, indicated where he should strike. Conan set his teeth and drove the sword deep. Blood streamed over the blade, and his hand in the monster started convulsively and then lay back, quite still. Sure that life had fled, at least life as he understood it, Conan set to work on his grisly task and quickly brought forth something that he felt must be the strange being's heart, though it differed curiously from any he had ever seen. Holding the still pulsing organ over the blazing jewel, he pressed it with both hands and a rain of blood fell on the stone. To his surprise, it did not run off, but was soaked into the gem, as water is absorbed by a sponge. Holding the jewel gingerly, he went out of the fantastic chamber and came upon the silver steps. He did not look back. He instinctively felt that some sort of transmutation was taking place in the body on the marble couch, and he further felt that it was of a sort not to be witnessed by human eyes. He closed the ivory door behind him and, without hesitation, descended the silver steps. It did not occur to him to ignore the instructions given him. He halted at an ebony door, in the center of which was a grinning silver skull, and pushed it open. He looked into a chamber of ebony and jet, and saw, on a black silken couch, a tall, spare form reclining. Yara, the priest and sorcerer, lay before him, his eyes open and dilated with the fumes of the yellow lotus, far staring as if fixed on gulfs and nighted abysses beyond human ken.
"Yara," said Conan, like a judge pronouncing doom, "awaken."
The eyes cleared instantly and became cold and cruel as a vulture's. The tall, silken-clad form lifted erect and towered gauntly above the Cimmerian.
"Dog!"
His hiss was like the voice of a cobra.
"What do you hear?"
Conan laid the jewel on the great ebony table.
"He who sent this gem bade me say, Yag-Kosha gives a last gift and a last enchantment."
Yara recoiled, his dark face ashy. The jewel was no longer crystal clear. Its murky depths pulsed and throbbed, and curious smoky waves of changing color passed over its smooth surface. As if drawn hypnotically, Yara bent over the table and gripped the gem in his hand, staring into its shadowed depths as if it were a magnet to draw the shuddering soul from his body. And as Conan looked, he thought that his eyes must be playing him tricks, for when Yara had risen from his couch, the priest had seemed gigantically tall, yet now he saw that Yara's head would scarcely come to his shoulder. He blinked, puzzled, and for the first time that night doubted his own senses. Then with a shock he realized that the priest was shrinking in stature, was growing smaller before his very gaze. With a detached feeling he watched, as a man might watch a play. Immersed in a feeling of overpowering unreality, the Cimmerian was no longer sure of his own identity. He only knew that he was looking upon the external evidences of the unseen play of vast outer forces beyond his understanding. Now Yara was no bigger than a child. Now, like an infant, he sprawled on the table, still grasping the jewel. And now the sorcerer suddenly realized his fate, and he sprang up, releasing the gem, but still he dwindled, and Conan saw a tiny pygmy figure rushing wildly about the ebony tabletop, waving tiny arms and shrieking in a voice that was like the squeak of an insect. Now he had shrunk until the great jewel towered above him like a hill, and Conan saw him cover his eyes with his hands as if to shield them from the glare, and he staggered about like a madman. Conan sensed that some unseen magnetic force was pulling Yara to the gem. Thrice he raced wildly about it in a narrowing circle. Thrice he strove to turn and run out across the table. Then, with a scream that echoed faintly in the ears of the watcher, the priest threw up his arms and ran straight toward the blazing globe. Bending close, Conan saw Yara clamber up the smooth, curving surface, impossibly like a man climbing a glass mountain.
Now the priest stood on the top, still with tossing arms, invoking what grisly names only the gods know. And then suddenly he sank into the very heart of the jewel as a man sinks into a sea, and Conan saw the smoky waves close over his head. Now he saw him in the crimson heart of the jewel, once more crystal clear, as a man sees a scene far away, tiny with great distance, and into the heart came a green, shining, winged figure with the body of a man and the head of an elephant, no longer blind or crippled. Yara threw up his arms and fled as a madman flees, and on his heels came the Avenger. Then, like the bursting of a bubble, the great jewel vanished in a rainbow burst of iridescent gems, and the ebony tabletop lay bare and deserted, as bare, Conan somehow knew, as the marble couch in the chamber above, where the body of that strange transcosmic being called Yagkosha and Yoga had lain. The Cimmerian turned and fled from the chamber down the silver stairs. So mazed was he that it did not occur to him to escape from the tower by the way he had entered it. Down that winding, shadowy silver well he ran and came into a large chamber at the foot of the gleaming stairs. There he halted for an instant. He had come into the room of the soldiers. He saw the glitter of their silver corselets, the sheen of their jeweled sword hilts. They sat slumped at the banquet board, their dusky plumes waving somberly above their drooping helmeted heads. They lay among their dice and fallen goblets to the wine-stained lapis lazuli floor. And he knew that they were dead. The promise had been made, the word kept. Whether sorcery or magic or the falling shadow of great green wings had stilled the revelry, Conan could not know, but his way had been made clear, and a silver door stood open, framed in the whiteness of dawn. Into the waving green gardens came the Cimmerian, and as the dawn wind blew upon him with the cool fragrance of luxuriant growths, he started like a man waking from a dream. He turned back uncertainly to stare at the cryptic tower he had just left. Was he bewitched and enchanted? Had he dreamed all that seemed to have passed? As he looked, he saw the gleaming tower sway against the crimson dawn, its jewel-crusted rims sparkling in the growing light, and crash into shining shards.